Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Did you know that the bold, smooth taste of Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed in your Keurig coffee maker and enjoyed at home? Dunkin's cold K-Cup pods were crafted to be brewed hot and enjoyed cold. And of course, they're packed with the Dunkin' flavor you crave. Brew over ice and sip in seconds. Because the home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Good morning. It's here. The country's first COVID case caused by the Omicron variant identified in California. Today, President Biden set to roll out a new plan to fight the strain and a potential winter surge. From masks to new travel rules, we've got everything you need to know. Seismic shift. The Supreme Court signals it could walk back abortion rights that have stood for nearly 50 years after hearing the biggest challenge on the issue in decades. New battle lines quickly being drawn from coast to coast. A final decision not expected for months as Roe v. Wade hangs in the balance. Red flags. Police revealed the accused school shooter in Michigan and his parents met with school officials to discuss concerning behavior on the morning of the rampage as a fourth classmate dies from his injuries and the suspect appears in court facing murder and terrorism charges.
It was absolutely premeditated.
We'll have the very latest. Breaking his silence, Alec Baldwin gets emotional in his first interview since that movie set shooting, claiming he did not pull the trigger in that fatal incident.
I would never point a gun at anyone and pull a trigger at them, never.
This morning, what the actor is now saying and new details from the investigation on how live bullets may have gotten onto the set. All that plus breaking overnight, hardball, Major League Baseball locking out its players. The game's first work stoppage in nearly three decades. Just ahead, an inside look at the dispute between owners and players. How long could it last and what it means for fans. And rocking around the Christmas tree. The Rockefeller Center icon set aglow with a massive crowd on hand to enjoy the festivities and to usher in the most wonderful time of the year. Today, Thursday, December 2nd, 2021.
From NBC News, this is Today with Savannah Guthrie and Hoda Kotb, live from Studio 1A in Rockefeller Plaza.
Hey guys, we are so happy that we are joining you. It is a Thursday morning, so happy you're here. Me, Savannah, and our
and
beautiful
our tree.
It was
and
so fun last night.
Baby tree makes three.
Baby tree. You guys, were you all at the Christmas tree lighting?
Yes.
A lot of people who are out here today were at the tree lighting. We had a blast.
People are so festive. Yep. They're all dressed up. The holiday season is here. It's so exciting.
It is. All right, guys. But we are going to begin this morning with the first case of the Omicron variant now confirmed here in the United States and the rapid response from the White House. The Biden administration set to extend federal mask mandates and require stricter testing for passengers coming in on flights from overseas. We're going to talk to Dr. Ashish Jha in just a moment. But first, NBC's Tom Costello joins us from the National Institutes of Health. Hey, Tom, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. You know, top health officials say it was only a matter of time before the Omicron variant showed up in the United States. That's now happened. President Biden later today will be here at the NIH laying out the administration's winter response plan. That will include requiring masks on planes, in airports, on trains and buses, all the way now through mid-March. That was going to expire in January, now extending that. Also today, for the first time, we're hearing from somebody who has experienced Omicron personally and firsthand.
This morning, the Biden administration is taking new and immediate action to fight the spread of the Omicron variant, extending the federal mask requirement in all airports, planes, trains, and buses through mid-March, and mandating stricter testing for every international traveler, including Americans, arriving from foreign airports starting next week.
The new regulation, if you want to call it that, is that anybody and everybody who's coming into the country needs to get a test within 24 hours of getting on the plane to come here.
The CDC now confirming the first U.S. case of Omicron. A resident of San Francisco who returned from South Africa on November 22nd, then started showing symptoms. The individual self-quarantining now and all close contacts have so far tested negative.
They had received a full dose of the Moderna vaccine, but no booster. They had mild symptoms and thankfully have now recovered. This is cause for concern, but is also certainly not a cause for us to panic.
Now the CDC is ordering airlines to share contact information for anyone who's traveled from that southern African region for future contact tracing. This Air China flight crew taking no chances at LAX, wearing full hazmat suits. The U.S. has already banned non-Americans from flying in from southern Africa, now an Omicron hot zone. And for the first time, we're hearing from a patient overseas who's been diagnosed with Omicron. Cardiologist Dr. Elad Moar, who's quarantining at home in Israel.
I had high temperature, muscle ache, sore throat.
He believes he caught Omicron last week in London while attending a 1,200-person medical conference where masks were only recommended. He attributes his mild symptoms to his being vaccinated and having a booster.
My case strengthened the need fully vaccinating, including a booster of all population.
Yeah, the administration also says getting people booster shots is a top priority. It's going to also encourage employers to give employees paid time off to get their boosters, to ask healthcare providers, talk to parents about getting their kids vaccinated. And also it's going to be looking at the total picture here and trying to ensure that as many people as possible are vaccinated going into the January month and beyond. Savannah, back to you.
All right, Tom, thank you. We want to welcome in Dr. Ashish Jha, Dean of Brown University School of Public Health. Hi, Dr. Jha. Good to see you again.
Good morning, Savannah. Thanks for having me back.
You and I talked, I guess, 3 days ago, and you said we will probably see a case of Omicron this week. And surely enough, we have. What do you make of this finding and just any bits, any clues that we can glean from it?
Yeah, not surprising, right? We knew this was coming. There's no reason to think America wouldn't have cases, given that so many other countries now do. Thankfully, this person's having mild symptoms. They are fully vaccinated, but haven't gotten a booster. Don't have a lot of information yet on whether what that means more broadly. Obviously, we're going to want to track that very closely.
I wanted to ask you about these rules that the Biden administration has now put into effect. Stricter testing for people coming back into the U.S., Americans or not, anyone coming from overseas. The mask mandate, the federal mask mandate for travel being extended until March, does that seem like the right decision or a little premature since we're basically waiting still for this information about the transmissibility and severity of this variant?
Yeah, so first of all, on the testing front, testing people when they come in from overseas, I think that's exactly right. I think it actually works much better than travel bans. People are going to be traveling back and forth and testing them when they get to the airport, testing them once they arrive in the U.S. That's going to be really important. On the federal mask mandates for air travel and trains, I think it's actually really important, not just for Omicron. It may not turn out to be that much more contagious, but just for Delta. I mean, we have 100,000 Americans getting infected every day, 1,000 Americans dying every day. I think mask mandates in those situations is really helpful, no matter what we learn about Omicron.
Well, again, we're all kind of waiting with bated breath, but we're all impatient. So there have been these little drips and drabs of information. And a Moderna official definitely raised some eyebrows and caused a little panic when he said earlier this week that he did expect a material drop in efficacy of the Moderna vaccine. Others, Pfizer's officials saying, don't freak out. We're not there yet. What's your take? How are you reading those same tea leaves?
Yeah, my read of the tea leaves at this moment is that there may very well be a hit to vaccine efficacy, especially for people who have not gotten a booster. We don't know. I like to actually wait for data to show up. We'll have data within a week or so. So I think that's going to be really helpful. I understand why the Moderna CEO is speculating as he is. He may turn out to be right, but let's actually look at the evidence that we'll have pretty soon.
And quickly, do you have any reason to believe that current tests that are out there are not detecting Omicron? Or I could have put that better. I mean, do the current tests detect Omicron?
They will. They do. Certainly our PCR tests should work just fine. And all the evidence we have says the antigen, the rapid antigen test should work as well. Companies are double checking on that, but I'm very confident it'll work.
Dr. Jha, thank you. As always, appreciate it.
Meantime, advocates of abortion rights are bracing for some profound changes now that it appears the Supreme Court is willing to walk back decades of its own precedents. NBC's justice correspondent Pete Williams is there with the very latest developments. Hey, Pete.
Hoda, that's right, the way to put it, I think. It now appears that the legal landscape on abortion is about to undergo or likely to undergo a profound change in the coming months based on the Supreme Court Justice's comments. It would be the biggest shift in abortion rights in nearly 50 years.
Opponents of abortion rights who gathered outside the Supreme Court appear to have something to cheer about after a heated courtroom argument. A majority of the court's conservatives appear likely to uphold a Mississippi law that would ban abortion after 15 weeks of pregnancy. That would undercut nearly five decades of rulings that say a state cannot ban abortion before a fetus is viable about 24 weeks into the pregnancy. Chief Justice John Roberts suggested he would uphold a Mississippi law without explicitly overturning Roe.
If it really is an issue about choice, why is 15 weeks not enough time?
Even so, such a ruling would undercut Roe, and the court's liberals warned that would seem like a decision based on politics.
Will this institution survive the stench that this creates in the public perception that the Constitution and its reading are just political acts?
It's unclear whether the court will go the whole way and overturn Roe completely, but even if it doesn't, doing away with the rule that says states cannot ban abortion before viability could embolden as many as half the states to pursue local laws that would make abortion illegal. Some already have bans on the books that would go into effect the moment the court's abortion precedents were overturned.
It's hard to think of something in the modern history of the United States that will be more epic than a ruling that either overrules or severely limits Roe versus Wade. It's so central to our understanding of what the Supreme Court is and does.
But we'll now have to wait to see how this drama ends. The decision in a case this complex and controversial very likely won't come until the end of the term. That means late June or early July. Hoda?
All right, Pete Williams for us there at the Supreme Court. Pete, thank you.
Also this morning, new details are emerging in that tragic school shooting in Michigan. The investigation is moving forward in the wake of a fourth student's death. The 15-year-old suspected gunman charged as an adult now, and police are revealing more about the events that led up to that rampage. NBC's Megan Fitzgerald is on the story for us again. Megan, good morning.
Savannah, good morning to you. That suspect has been identified as 15-year-old Ethan Crumbly. He has pleaded not guilty to some 24 criminal counts, including a terrorism charge as well as first-degree murder. This morning, law enforcement are still searching for a motive.
Could you state your full name for us, please?
Ethan Robert Crumbly.
The suspected teen shooter appearing in court remotely, along with his parents. The sheriff now revealing that school officials were in contact with Crumbly twice to discuss concerning behavior in class, the day before the incident and that same morning when his parents also came to the school for a face-to-face meeting.
We had no information from the schools, but we have since learned that the schools did have contact with the student.
Just 3 hours after that last meeting with his parents, authorities say school security cameras show the gunman walking out of a bathroom and entering a hallway. The attack being called premeditated by the Oakland County prosecutor, who says they found video and journal entries of him talking about killing students.
It was absolutely premeditated.
The 15-year-old sophomore pleading not guilty to a slew of charges, including one count of terrorism causing death and four counts of first-degree murder. This morning, new details about what happened inside Oxford High. Police say he fired off more than 30 rounds. He still had 18 bullets left when police stopped him just minutes later. Police say the murder weapon, a Sig Sauer handgun, was purchased days earlier by the suspect's father. Four students were killed. 17-year-old Justin Schilling, 14-year-old Hannah St. Juliana, 17-year-old Madison Baldwin, and 16-year-old Tate Meir. Senior Christina Myers heard gunshots in the hallway before she and other students frantically stacked chairs against the classroom door.
So you were preparing to die?
Oh, yeah. I thought that he was going to come into the classroom.
She quickly texted her dad, "I love you. There's shooting. I love you." The trauma from that day just now settling in.
I know that I can't move on from this because I know four kids won't be able to move on from this.
Crumbly is being held without bond, and prosecutors are saying that not only could he face additional charges, but his parents could also be charged, though it's still unclear as to what those charges could be.
Savannah.
All right, Megan Fitzgerald, thank you very much.
It is 14 minutes after the hour. Craig joins us now with another big story out of Washington,
D.C. Hey, hello, Savannah. Good morning. Good morning to you as well. We're talking about former President Trump's bout with COVID during the 2020 election. It's back in the spotlight this morning after a revelation in a new book from his chief of staff at the time, Mark Meadows. And this morning, both men are speaking out. NBC's chief White House correspondent, Kristen Welker, joins us with all the details. Kristen, good morning.
Hi, Craig. Good morning to you. Former President Trump is facing mounting questions about whether he and his aides deceived the American people by covering up a positive COVID test at a key moment in the 2020 campaign. His testing status was under a microscope before the first debate, and of course, Savannah pushed him on the timeline soon after. The question this morning, could Mr. Trump have spread it to others in those critical days? This morning, new fallout amid stunning revelations. Former President Trump tested positive for COVID-19 3 days before that contentious first debate with then-candidate Joe Biden.
I don't wear masks like him. Every time you see him, he's got a mask.
The disclosure in a new book by Mr. Trump's former chief of staff, Mark Meadows, and obtained by The Guardian, but not reviewed by NBC News. Meadows adds that Mr. Trump received a negative result from a separate test hours later. Three sources familiar with the matter confirmed that timeline to NBC News, and two of those sources characterized the former president's initial test as a false positive because of that subsequent negative test, a point Meadows echoed overnight.
Well, the president's right. It's fake news.
How did it all unfold? September 26th, Mr. Trump presided over a Rose Garden ceremony to nominate Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court, and then that evening traveled to a rally in Pennsylvania when the positive test came in, sending shockwaves through the White House, according to The Guardian. In the days following, a busy public schedule, including a ceremony with Gold Star families and a COVID briefing, all before heading to that debate on Tuesday, September 29th. Then Friday, October 2nd, the bombshell. Mr. Trump announced he'd contracted COVID after receiving a positive test. On the exact same day, New York Times reporter Michael Shear tested positive for COVID after he'd traveled with the president aboard Air Force One on the day of the Pennsylvania rally.
Bottom line, do you think you got COVID from former President Trump?
I can't be 100% sure. I was on that plane. We were talking to the president. He didn't have a mask on. It was pretty clear to me that the plane was where I got COVID.
Weeks later, and after the former president was out of the hospital, Savannah pressed Mr. Trump about when exactly he tested positive.
When did you last remember having a negative test?
Well, I test quite a bit, and I can tell you that before the debate, which I thought it was a very good debate, and I felt fantastically. I had no problem before.
Did you test the day
afterwards.
Of the debate?
I don't know. I don't even remember. I test all the time. But I can tell you this. After the debate, like, I guess a day or so, I think it was Thursday evening, maybe even late Thursday evening, I tested positive. That's when I first found out.
Of course, the key exchange there. Mr. Trump said in a statement, the story of me having COVID prior to or during the first debate is, quote, fake news. But he did not address whether he had received a positive test before the first debate. Craig.
Our chief White House correspondent, Kristen Welker, there at the White House. Kristen, thank you.
All right, 7:18. Didn't we have a good time last
night? That was
night?
Fun. It was a blast. Good, great weather, too.
That was perfect.
Spectacular.
Perfect
day. Warmer than usual. And, in fact, a lot of folks seeing some record-setting temperatures today and well above where they should be. Rapid City today, 30 degrees above average, almost 30 degrees above average in Denver. Chicago, you're going to be near 60. These are temperatures you would see in October, early October for Kansas City, late September for Rapid City and Denver. And as we make our way east for today, Cleveland, you're going to be at 55, New York City, 57. That should be temperatures. Those should be temperature highs that we see around November 12th. Washington, D.C., November 1st. Indianapolis in mid-October and record highs today. Rapid City, Billings, Montana, Denver, Amarillo, Quincy, Springfield, Oklahoma City. And then tomorrow, those warm temperatures spread east. Cincinnati will be in the low 60s. Fort Smith, 77. Same in Dallas and Oklahoma City as well. But we do see a cool down by Monday. Minneapolis, you're at 30, 36 in Chicago, 48 in Louisville. By Monday, it'll be 43 degrees in Kansas City. And that is your latest weather. Guys?
Thank you, Al. And coming up, overnight drama in baseball. Major League owners locking out their own players and shutting down the game for the first time in a quarter century. Could the next season be in jeopardy? We'll have the latest on that and reaction from fans.
Plus, Alec Baldwin's first interview since that fatal movie set shooting. The actor now insisting he never actually pulled the trigger. We will hear from him and tell you about a key new twist in that investigation. But first, this is Today on NBC.
At Rural First, we're the leader in rural construction loans because we don't work here. We work out here. We live rural, which means we know just what you need to build rural. Our dedicated team of loan specialists works with you throughout the construction process. And with our digital tool, you can manage your project all in one place. That's how Rural First gets you closer to what matters. Rural First is a registered trademark of Farm Credit Mid-America. NMLS 407249. Equal housing lender. Loan subject to approval and eligibility. Other terms and conditions may apply. Visit ruralfirst.com for more details.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/today. Just go to Indeed.com/today right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/today. Conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We're back at 7:30. We just can't get enough of that sight after the big tree lighting here in Rockefeller Center. Such a beautiful tree and a great start to the holiday season. Mm-hmm.
She did so well last night, that tree.
Yeah, I know. She did. Exactly.
So well. She showed up.
Yes. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, got a busy morning. We'll begin this half hour with 7:30 headlines. A man charged in connection with the January 6th riot at the U.S. Capitol acknowledged using a stun gun on a federal officer. The Justice Department released video this week of Daniel Rodriguez's interrogation. In that video, the 39-year-old admits using a stun gun on a Metropolitan Police officer, Michael Fanone. Rodriguez also told investigators that former President Trump called them to D.C. that day.
If he's the commander-in-chief and the leader of our country, then he's calling for hope. They thought he was calling for hope. They thought we were doing the right thing.
Rodriguez faces a list of charges, has been detained since his arrest in March. His attorneys have argued that statements Rodriguez made about the officer are inadmissible in court.
We are hearing from CNN anchor Chris Cuomo for the first time since his suspension from the network. CNN sidelined Cuomo on Tuesday after a state investigation showed in greater detail how he helped his brother, former Governor Andrew Cuomo, defend himself against sexual misconduct allegations. Cuomo addressed the suspension on Tuesday on his SiriusXM radio show.
It's embarrassing, but I understand it. And I understand why some people feel the way they do about what I did. It's the last thing I ever wanted to do was compromise any of my colleagues and do anything but help.
That was Wednesday on a SiriusXM radio show. As for Cuomo's future, CNN says it is up in the air pending further evaluation.
Now to some heart-stopping moments for a couple of workers in Florida after a scaffolding collapse left them dangling off the side of a high-rise condo. A rescue crew had to be lowered down from the building's rooftop while other firefighters approached them from a bucket truck in the building's balconies. One worker was safely lowered to the ground. The other was rescued by that bucket truck. Thankfully, though, no one was injured. Pretty scary, though.
Firefighters are so brave. Yeah. Wow. Let's go to some breaking news from the world of sports overnight. For the first time in more than 25 years, Major League Baseball is now in a work stoppage. Owners locking out players after months of failed talks toward a new labor contract.
NBC's Morgan Chesky is in Arlington at the home of the Texas Rangers. Hey, Morgan.
Hey, Savannah Hoda, good morning. As of 11:59 Eastern last night, that lockout went into effect. That means no more trades, no more signings. Most importantly, no more baseball until players and owners can come to some sort of agreement. And with both sides swinging for the fences, that could be a while.
This morning, they're not coming.
It's America's pastime now grinding to a halt for the first time in almost 30 years. Failed negotiations between teams and the players' union led owners to lock out the players overnight. The stoppage the first since 1994. And now the big question, will it impact the start of the season next spring?
It is a very uncertain time. I think a time of insecurity for a lot of players.
We may think of it as a way to spend a leisurely afternoon. But this dispute is a little more complicated, and it's all about the massive paydays that's now come with baseball stardom. The standoff puts the brakes on recent blockbuster deals, with nearly $2 billion in contracts announced over the last month alone.
The biggest economic issues right now between MLB and the union have to do with when players become free agents and how much they get paid.
Ace pitcher Max Scherzer is on the union's executive board.
We're trying to make the game better. When I hear that every other player, whether young or old, we're all saying the same thing, clubhouse to clubhouse.
On the other side, baseball is the only major sport without a salary cap, enabling the game's superstars like the 37-year-old Scherzer to sign record-breaking contracts.
I think it's difficult on the union side for them to argue that the free agent system is broken because, in fact, we have seen all this money spent.
Fortunately for fans, both sides know they can't afford to lose any games next season.
A year ago, the players lost two-thirds of their salary, you know, because of the pandemic. The owners say they lost $2.5 billion with the pandemic, so they don't want anything to turn off the fans.
There hasn't been a baseball strike since the disastrous 1994 season, when the playoffs and even World Series were canceled, leaving fans furious.
My son personally loves baseball.
Brandon Fry's 4-year-old son, Brock, records every Rangers game. He's already asked Dad, how long till next season? For now, nobody knows.
Nobody does know. So is there any indication, Morgan, of when this thing may fix itself? What's going to happen next year?
Yeah, well, considering where things stand right now, Hoda, it could be a while, especially with one union official saying that they've accumulated a war chest of money to keep them afloat during these ongoing negotiations. So right now, all eyes should go to February. That's when pitchers and catchers report for spring training. One official says if no negotiations are reached by then, it could be a pretty troubling sign.
Okay. Hoda? All right, Morgan Chesky for us. Thank you.
If there's one major league sport that cannot afford a lockout, it's baseball.
Yeah. How much does the top guy make in baseball?
Well, I mean, you know, not to put anybody on blast, but Max Scherzer a couple days ago signed a contract worth more than $40 million a season.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. A lot of money.
But, I mean, there are others that are making, we've got
big
baseball
bucks.
Players that are doing like $200 million contracts.
Yeah.
Fans don't, anyway.
Yeah, okay.
You didn't sign up for ESPN this morning.
All right, But we did. We love it. Coming up next, Alec Baldwin speaks out and denies pulling the trigger in that fatal shooting on the set of his latest movie.
How he's describing what happened that day and the new questions it's raising right after this.
And we're back with In Depth today. This morning, new twist in that fatal shooting on the set of Alec Baldwin's new movie.
Yeah, the actor is now speaking out about the role he played as investigators reveal some new details on how live bullets may have gotten to that set.
NBC national correspondent Miguel Almaguer is in Los Angeles. He's been covering this story since the outset. Hi, Miguel. Good morning.
Hey, guys, good morning. In Alec Baldwin's first sit-down interview since the fatal shooting, the film's lead actor and producer is openly emotional, recounting the moments that the Western film became the scene of a set of a tragedy.
This morning, a new twist in the fatal shooting on the set of Rust. Alec Baldwin speaking out to ABC News.
Well, the trigger wasn't pulled. I didn't pull the trigger.
So you never pulled the trigger?
No. I would never point a gun at anyone and pull a trigger at them, never.
Posted clips of the interview do not include the actor's explanation for how the gun went off, but the revelation contradicts witness statements and what Baldwin himself told responding officers. Investigators say he was in costume practicing a cross draw when the deadly shot was fired. The interview comes as authorities release new details about how live rounds may have made it onto set. According to a newly released search warrant, Thel Reed, a noted Hollywood weapons expert and father of Rust armor Hannah Gutierrez Reed, told investigators Seth Kenny, who supplied some of the ammunition used on Rust, also had live ammo. Thel Reed says those real bullets were used on a prior production they both worked on and may match the ammunition found on the set of Rust. Officers searching Kenny's prop shop on Tuesday night, finding suspected live ammo. Neither Kenny nor Thel Reed responded to our request for comment.
I think back, and I think of what could I have done.
You're going to trust me, too. It's true.
What? When the prop gun was fired, the bullet struck the film's director, Joel Souza, and killed 42-year-old cinematographer Helena Hutchins. With no charges filed, this morning, authorities are still working to pinpoint who is ultimately responsible.
There are also some new details about the hours leading up to the fatal shooting. Investigators say Hannah Gutierrez-Reed loaded and locked up the prop gun before the crew took a lunch break. But once they returned, she admits that she, quote, didn't really check the firearm too much before it was fired. Meanwhile, her attorneys are pointing back to those how those live rounds got on the set in the first place. Guys, back to you.
Still seems like so many questions, Miguel. Thank you very much.
All right, 7:43 now. Mr. Roker, how are we looking, buddy?
Well, we're looking fairly warm. We've got the stats in for fall, and it's going to pose an interesting question. We'll get to that in a second, but unseasonably warm temperatures. You can see the only really cool spot was down through the southeast of the Mississippi River Valley. 92% of the lower 48 had above average fall temperatures. Over 100 cities having their top 10 warmest falls on record. And as you move into the Northeast, here's a question. Does an unseasonably warm fall mean less snow for the winter? Well, in Boston, second warmest fall, Newark warmest fall on record, fourth warmest in Philly, sixth warmest in D.C. Well, look at this. 9 out of 10 winters following a warm fall, unusually warm fall, less snow. 7 out of 10 in Newark, 8 out of 10 in Philadelphia, 9 out of 10 in Washington, D.C. But you get around into the Midwest, Buffalo warmest fall on record, Cleveland fifth warmest, fourth in Detroit, third in Chicago. A little less definitive. 6 out of 10 less snowier winters for Chicago. 6 out of 10 in Detroit, Cleveland 5 out of 10, and Buffalo 4 out of 10. So the jury's out there. We are watching a couple of clippers coming across the Great Lakes today, bringing a little light snow. It's not going to be a big deal. It's going to be pushing windy areas, some rain in the Northeast, snow showers around the Great Lakes tomorrow. Second clipper comes across, and again, this is light snow, light stuff, 1 to 2 inches stretching from Marquette, Michigan into parts of New England. And that's your latest weather, guys.
All right, Al, thank you. Coming up next, a store you cannot afford to miss. If anybody in your home, young or old, is obsessed with chicken tenders.
What? Three meals a day, we're obsessed. From restaurants to grocery stores, prices are up. If you can find them at all, what is a family to do? There's only one man for this job, Mr. Maple Syrup.
The shortage king.
I know, he is. He can multitask, and we're on to chicken tenders right after this.
At Rural First, we're the leader in rural construction loans because we don't work here. We work out here. We live rural, which means we know just what you need to build rural. Our dedicated team of loan specialists works with you throughout the construction process. And with our digital tool, you can manage your project all in one place. That's how Rural First gets you closer to what matters. Rural First is a registered trademark of Farm Credit Mid-America. NMLS 407249. Equal housing lender. Loan subject to approval and eligibility. Other terms and conditions may apply. Visit ruralfirst.com for more details.
What do 8 bags of concrete mix, a cooler full of 30-pound sea bass, and a 10-inch compound miter saw have in common? They're all things that are easier to load in and out of the bed of the new F-150, thanks to its new available Pro-Access tailgate that's also a swing gate. The new 2024 Ford F-150, tough this smart, can only be called F-150.
Available starting early 2024, Pro-Access tailgate available starting spring 2024, cargo and load capacity limited by weight and weight distribution.
We are back with our ongoing series, Race to Deliver, as we deliver the return of Carson Daly.
Yes, good to be back, guys. Good to be back. This is a doozy of a story, and it will affect a lot of families, certainly mine, because in some households, the chicken tender, you know, is one of the major food groups.
Yes.
And rumors now of a shortage are striking fears into the hearts of parents everywhere.
Yeah, like right here. NBC's Carrie Sanders, no relation to Colonel Sanders, has the details. Hi, Carrie, good morning.
Actually, my dad was a colonel in the U.S. Army Air Force, so there's that.
Okay.
Stand corrected.
Anyway, good morning, guys. Your moms and dads, and this is really a warning for parents all over the country. If your kids are picky eaters, and no matter what you try to do to get them eat colorful things, and it's always a return to the chicken fingers, the chicken tenders like we have here, there's a warning today. Supply and demand problems once again, because as you head to the nation's freezer, there is once again a problem. It appears that the chicken tenders have flown the coop.
Hey guys, we got soccer tomorrow. He's excited.
For the Edmonds family in Scottsdale, Arizona, a chicken tender shortage is nothing short of a crisis.
What did you have for breakfast this morning?
Chicken
tenders.
My kids eat hamburgers, french fries. I have to wrestle them to eat vegetables. When I come home from the store and I don't have chicken tenders, my kids are not happy.
And they are definitely not alone. Americans are expected to eat almost 100 pounds of chicken per person this year.
The shelves have been empty recently. Restaurants have been out of chicken tenders, and that makes it very difficult when you have kids that have unlimited options.
Chicken tenders are the smaller fillet of a whole chicken breast, not to be confused with chicken nuggets, which are made of scrap meat from the whole bird. Tenders require more processing to package and sell, which industry experts say is part of the reason why they can be harder to find and now more costly when you get them at your local market. Value packs of tenders are currently selling at $3.99 per pound on average. That's nearly a dollar more than a year ago. And it's not just families feeling the impact. Big chains like KFC and A&W are changing their marketing plans to omit tenders from promotions to avoid selling out. At Hattie B's Hot Chicken, an iconic chain headquartered in Nashville, tenders are their most popular menu item.
There's no safe harbor in supply chain right now. We see it across the board, but certainly you feel the pain the most in tenders.
They can get enough chicken to get by, but not without shelling out top dollar for it.
We haven't even passed along any kind of menu price increases this year. If we were pricing along with it, I don't know that folks would still want to pay what it would cost.
Chicken tenders in short supply. For some families, a shortage that's laying an egg.
So check your freezers, and if you're out, it may be difficult to get your chicken tenders home to roost, guys.
What about those dinosaur-shaped chicken tenders?
There may not be a shortage of those.
Okay, tomorrow it's the
shortage of
fish.
Chicken.
That's a shortage.
Guys, thank coming up Carrie. On Pop's Art. Thanks, Carrie. What Ben Affleck is saying about his rekindled romance with J-Lo, that'll put a nice smile on your face this morning, we hope.
Ooh, yeah.
It'll soften the blow of the chicken tenders.
That's right.
At Rural First, we're the leader in rural construction loans because we don't work here. We work out here. We live rural, which means we know just what you need to build rural. Our dedicated team of loan specialists works with you throughout the construction process. And with our digital tool, you can manage your project all in one place. That's how Rural First gets you closer to what matters. Rural First is a registered trademark of Farm Credit Mid-America. NMLS 407249. Equal housing lender. Loan subject to approval and eligibility. Other terms and conditions may apply. Visit ruralfirst.com for more details.